Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Thank you, and I appreciate you being here. My guest today is Omar Yassin. He is a pharmacy resident down in Arizona. He is originally from Egypt. We have checked his birth date, and he is a member of Gen Z, and I'm delighted to have him here. Omar, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Rob. How is your day doing?
Going very well. Thank you for asking. I appreciate it. So can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your role in healthcare, please?
So basically, as you mentioned, I'm a pharmacy resident. I've been to multiple rotation sites, both community and hospital. And at this point, I really consider myself still a student, learning every single day. I enjoy having multiple areas. I still not have a specific specialty, but I'm really focused on geriatric medicine. I find it as a very nice field, and there's a lot of work to do there.
Okay, so what attracts you to geriatric medicine? What is it about the field that kind of resonates with you?
I feel like personally, if I put myself in their position, I would really love at this certain stage of life that you really are more relieved, both physically and mentally. You have much less responsibilities to take care of. And this is the time where we all, as human beings, want to relax and retire and enjoy our last few years of life. So trying to make that as easy as possible is one of my priorities in this field.
Okay. I love what you just said, because you said, I put myself in their shoes and think, what would I want if I was there? That is such an important way to approach the people that we serve. Sometimes being, you know, thinking, if I was them, what would I want? How would I like to be treated if I was in their shoes? I had another guest who was on and said, if this was a family member of mine, how would I treat them? So if this was, you know, my grandmother, my grandfather, what would be the characteristics of care that I would want to see in their plan? So I appreciate what you said there, and that's great. What does quality healthcare mean to you?
I mean, basically, it's simple, really. It's more about putting your patient's health as your main priority, rather than your patient's health's priority during their hospital stay and after. And I want to emphasize on the after, because what surprises me the most when I'm doing my rotations is the amount of patients that come back as soon as they're discharged. And that just raises the question in my head, what is going on wrong here? Specifically now, in addition to that, I want to add that we, as all healthcare professionals, we have some sort of a gift of knowledge, and that we acquired from our learning and our practice. And I find as a responsibility, more like a duty, to broadcast that all over whenever possible. So something like what you're doing right now, trying to get the experience or the knowledge of other healthcare professionals, is some sort of a quality healthcare, because your audience is going to be like, all right, you know what? I did not know this information. I want to learn more about this. I want to add this to my lifestyle. So yeah, that's the necessity that we need to do as a quality healthcare.
I appreciate that. And buttering up the host is never a bad idea. And that's good. Let me say this though. You bring up an interesting point, and that is, what happens? You have someone who's in the hospital, and in the hospital, you have 24/7 care, and then they're sent home with relatively little care, and you have a recurrence of that issue. Do you have any thoughts about bridging the gap so that you have people who are leaving the hospital, they're going home, and they're getting sufficient care, sufficient support so that they don't end up with a recurrence and a return to the hospital?
I'm not saying it's understandable that there has to be fluctuations in the treatment overall. Somebody may not be feeling better and they leave. I just think it's more about, if we want to specify it to older adults, it could be the most common thing we see is polypharmacy and how they might be on multiple prescriptions to treat other symptoms or adverse effects of other medications. And most of the times, most patients, they don't know what they're on. And due to many scheduling medications, they might miss the important ones or disregard them. That's could be a proper reason why a lot of the older patients actually come back if they're quickly discharged.
Okay. Can you give me an example of quality healthcare? What would quality healthcare look like?
Specifically, I could say is, let's say I think the main approach to how to treat older adults has to focus on their psychological age rather than their biological age. So if you want to dig deeper into that, I feel like we should treat the psychological health rather than how they're biologically or physiologically feeling. So for example, I feel that initiating activities to add more value to older adults, to increase their social engagement, their sense of fulfillment, is what's going to heighten their mind health. And therefore, they're going to feel they're younger and having more thrive to live. So an example is, there's actually a foundation that conducts, it's called AARP, and it's really innovative approaches in helping older adults in having some sort of independence in their own life. So I'll give a quick example of what they do. They have a sort of program called Experience Forbes, where it recruits older adults of 50 years and older to become tutors in elementary schools or personal tutors, and just to help enhance academic performance for children. I find it in a very strategic way an amazing opportunity for older adults to like somehow contribute to the public. They feel that they are still providing. They're not useless. They're not lonely. There's no sort of depression going to develop because they feel that they are still harnessing the positive impact on their community. That's just a random example of a quality healthcare that could be disregarded.
Okay, so I will just lay out some parameters here. Number one, be careful who you call old, because those of us who have just turned 50 and are eligible for AARP are not quite feeling as though I'm an older adult, although from your perspective, I'm sure that I am. And there's also an organization called SCORE, which is the society, the service corps of retired executives, where it's people who have been in the business world. They've got experience there, they've retired, and they're now taking that expertise and sharing it with younger entrepreneurs. And I think it's a similar model where you have people who have tremendous life experience and are interested and willing to share that. And it provides understanding for the people that they're working with, but it also provides a sense of value for them to say, it's not like I'm old, I'm retired, and now I've been put on the shelf, but I'm retired. I've got more latitude in what I do and what I don't do. And yet I still have something of value to contribute. And I think that's a phenomenal idea.
And that is 10 times better than setting them up for any sort of anxiety medications, depression medications, because I feel somehow they are lacking that social contribution, as you mentioned. And this could somehow might be a more beneficial approach to take, you know? And as you mentioned, I want to get back to that. The age of 50 is a biological age. However, you turning 50, 60, or anybody, if they still feel sometimes they feel like, oh, I'm doing the exact same things I was doing in my 30s. But that's the psychological age I was bringing it up. So that's really something important to look at overall.
Excellent. Good stuff. Let me ask this. What do you wish people understood about your role in healthcare?
As a future pharmacist, I just feel that a lot of the community understands pharmacists as a supplier for their medication needs, but it kind of limits our potential of what we can actually provide overall. So personally, I just wish that this misconception to the public, we still want to aim for your optimal health. That doesn't mean we only are able to provide pharmacological approaches. I feel like as a healthcare provider overall, you should be more inclined to, first of all, emphasize the importance of non-pharmacological approaches, even as a pharmacist, and then in some certain cases, push the pharmacological approaches to go ahead. That sort of stigma that every person that has some sort of disease, some sort of pain, goes to a pharmacist to just get some med is what I want people to take their mind off, because we really can provide you with, or you can take our word for healthcare lifestyle approaches and new accommodations to add to your diet and style overall.
Okay. It's very interesting to me because every time I go to my local pharmacy, I am offered an opportunity to have a consult with my pharmacist. And I rarely take advantage of that because I feel like, you know, I know what medications I'm on and I'm good to go. And yet what you're saying is there may be some expertise there that is available that we could take advantage of, and yet we are predisposed not to because we don't truly understand the knowledge base and the role that the pharmacist has. Am I properly understanding what you've said?
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. You mentioned, and I'll give you a random statistics that actually happened in 2020. So in Canada, pharmacists filled an average of 74 prescriptions per year for people aged 80 and older, compared to only 14 prescriptions in most other age groups. I'm just bringing it back to the point that over time, a person just because they are on medications or they go to medication to pharmacies all their life, they get this understanding that this is my destination to go to for medications only. I've never tried the counseling points, and I don't have to try them. I've been going to pharmacies for 50 years. I've never tried them. No need to try them.
Yeah. So, and let me highlight something else that you said. You're talking about not just looking at pharmacological the side of things, but you are also looking at mental health. You're looking at all of those things. In my own personal life, I know that there are times when I struggle, you know, I'm feeling down, I'm feeling, you know, just having a rough time. And during those times, one of the most powerful ways for me to get out of that is to go do something for someone else. And in that, there is an experience of feeling a purpose, feeling a connection, feeling of service, and feeling value. And that all is accomplished without a stitch of medication or anything along those lines. But it's as real and it's as impactful as any medication could be. What's your reaction to that?
I definitely agree with this. I always say that too. If I take it even out of the healthcare standpoint, a person really overall in their life, they only feel good once they have a purpose in life. The impact you have on the people around you is what truly makes you or drives you to want to do more and more. If you want to consider people that have and I'm not saying it from a medicalization standpoint, I'm just saying it from sort of mental illness or disease initiates from a lack of purpose. They are in some sort of, they know themselves that they're not contributing something to their own lives. They have nothing going on in their own lives. And somehow that initiates the sense of depression. I'm not saying that this is the case for everybody, but if you are working very hard and you're getting results and you're getting accomplishments, you're definitely going to associate that with feeling it's a chain that can go either direction. Either you're going to sit down and do absolutely nothing and feel useless, or you're going to work and achieve and accomplish, and you're going to feel good about yourself. Yeah.
Good. What excites you about the future of healthcare?
It's technology, really. As you said, like me, Gen Z, obviously something like AI emerging is going to enhance the healthcare field overall in a very fascinating way. I feel like integrating it, we have to learn, first of all, how to integrate all this into our healthcare activities. So it could be really used as a way for treatment approaches, especially specialized or specific treatment approaches for patients. I feel also like in some sort of way it could minimize human errors. And you know, we always talk about minimizing burnout and the burnout issues that everybody in a hospital, for example, or a community pharmacy or any healthcare profession would have. So that could be used in a way to minimize all these burnouts.
Yeah, AI is definitely as a support to take away some of the more tedious tasks and repetitive tasks. Yep, excellent. All right.
Like, it's the issue that I feel like a lot of people are not open to adding that to their own or taking away previous methods and integrating new methods. That's all. There's always going to be somebody standing against that, and we just have to encourage to integrate new approaches if they're around. You know.
Yep. All right. Last question for you. What is one thing medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I would definitely bring it back to lifestyle modifications, emphasizing really how diet, sleep, and exercise can really prolong your overall health and lifespan as well. Like, I'll give you an example. If you ask somebody at a younger age or like anybody during the lifespan, what's the most disease that they're afraid of, most people would say dementia or Alzheimer's dementia. That's something that scares everybody, right?
Yeah.
And if I can bring it back to some research, they say that the Apple A4 gene specifically is a really nice precursor for Alzheimer. But that doesn't mean like once you have that gene, you're going to get the disease. It's the combination or the association with external environmental factors like the diet and exercise that really are contribute to that in such a way. So people really need to understand how important diet is when it comes to diseases overall. Additionally, like aging overall, it's been proven that like your physiological systems are aging in an inflammatory way. So the more inflammation that happens inside your body, in your organs, the more you're going to have the physiological effects of aging. And it's also been proven that a 10-year moderator risk, that exercise is the main driver for reducing the inflammation in all organ parts. That's something that people don't emphasize on, you know. Another thing, I'll give another example that people do not know of. You probably know about the ASCVD risk score, and it's usually used a lot in determining somebody's primary prevention for any heart conditions. So an option that says there, one of the things, the elements that they use there is being a smoker or not. And do you know, like, I want the audience to know that you're technically a non-smoker. You can put the non-smoker option. If you haven't smoked for 7 days consecutively, that's something people don't know of. So all these approaches should be more broadcasted, especially when it comes from a healthcare provider.
Okay. It makes a lot of sense, and I appreciate you sharing that those thoughts. Listen, Omar, thank you for taking the time to be with me today. Thank you for sharing your thoughts, and I respect you and your perspective on healthcare.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.